Baseball season is officially here. The Milwaukee Brewers about to get the season underway in San Diego. They'll be coming home on Monday to face the St. Louis Cardinals. And the team is just about taking shape, although not 100% as we record this on Wednesday. I'm J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Brewers podcast, the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, joined solely by Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter. Tom Hodricourt is with the team in San Diego, so it's just me and you this time, Todd. How do you feel about that?
Welcome to the palatial Rosiak abode, JR.
Yes.
Always nice to have you here.
Yes, recording from Todd's from the Waukesha Bureau of Todd Rosiak. Is that right?
Correct.
So the Brewers roster, like we said, not finalized just yet, but we have a pretty clear picture. If you go to JS Online, you can check out Todd's 1 through 25 ranking of the 25 guys that you can reasonably expect on the Brewers roster. I guess, just in general terms, is there anything that jumps out at you about where we're headed? Maybe we're not sure who's going to be the last couple guys in the bullpen, but for the most part, we know this roster. This feels like kind of what you could have predicted at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of spring training, right? There weren't too many surprises.
Yeah, I mean, you always look at the last two or three spots is always fluid, and it's no different this season or this year. Coming into the date where you have to set the roster, which is tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning, right before the opener. I guess if there's one surprise, I don't know that I would necessarily call it a surprise, but I think many people expected one of the outfielders, namely Domingo Santana, to not be on the roster.
Sure.
You know, figured he would be a piece of trade bait to be used to pick up some additional pitching. Hodricourt did write a story. He talked to Domingo yesterday in Houston about it, and he's still here. I can't say I'm necessarily surprised. He had a great year last year. From what we understand, that the Brewers did shop him in the offseason, didn't find a deal to their liking, and decided to hang on to him. And now the question becomes, how does Craig Counsell fit four guys into three spots, essentially, each game, each night? And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. My question with Santana is, can he put up similar production this coming season in sporadic play? You know, sporadic sporadic at bats, because, you know, I can't remember off the top of my head. I mean, definitely over 500 at bats, maybe 600 last year, put up a career year. This year, when you're playing every other day, maybe, or 4 days a week, how does that affect it? I would think negatively, but you don't know. So to me, that's probably the biggest thing, or kind of the question, I guess, that was finally answered. And now over the next 24 hours here, and according to what Tom tweeted a little bit earlier, we may even know the personnel moves later Wednesday, as far as what happens at the bottom of the roster. You know, guys like J.J. Hoover, Oliver Drake, typically the Brewers have done kind of moving around, picking up guys right at the deadline. A couple years ago, Carlos Torres. This last year, it was Jared Hughes. So it would not surprise me to see them doing a little bit more tweaking with the bullpen. But otherwise, I think the 1 through 25, as we have it, is pretty accurate and pretty close to what it's going to be on opening day.
Oliver Drake has struggled a little bit, but he does get lefties out, and with Boone Logan right now to start the season on the DL as a left-handed pitcher, that's a valuable commodity. And with Santana, I'm interested to see how Jesus Aguiar gets used then, you know, right-handed power bat off the bench. Presumably that's where Aguiar is going to be, you know, he's going to be coming off the bench pretty much all year. So I'm curious to know how all that stuff comes together even after the season starts.
Not to cut you off, JR, but Aguilar, you know, I could have brought that up in the roster thing too. He's really only safe for the first week here, you know.
Yeah.
When you look at how the roster's constructed, that's another kind of interesting thing that's going to bear watching, is by starting Woodruff in the bullpen for the first week, that gets Aguilar onto the team. But once they need that fifth starter, that will be Woodruff next Friday against the Cubs, then what do you do? You know, where does Aguilar fit? How do you keep him on the roster? Something's got to give. So I know they love the guy, and his teammates love him. He's very important in the clubhouse. More importantly, the guy's produced and in the opportunities that he's had. So it's one of those things where the brain trust, David Stern and David Stearns and so forth, kind of earn their money, because it's a sticky spot, and it's one that they've kind of, I guess, a can that they've been kind of kicking down the road and are going to continue to kick down the road until they absolutely have to make a decision. Because if you let Aguilar out there and you cut him loose, there's no way you're going to get him back. So That's definitely another spot worth watching.
Right. Brewers used 50 players last year on their roster, so we know the top, the 25 that break camp are in no way, shape, or form the 25 who have the biggest impact necessarily. And so I'm curious, of the guys who did not make this roster, who would you speculate is going to have the biggest impact this year? There's probably a lot of bullpen guys who you figure will get a ton of innings this year, but who might be one or two guys that you really see starting the year in the minors but are going to have a big impact as the year goes on?
Yeah, out of the guys that were sent down toward the end of camp, there's nobody that really jumps out at me per se. I would say Junior Guerra will definitely be in the mix at some point. You obviously are not going to get through a season with using only five starters. I think the Brewers used 13 last year, if my math is correct. So, you know, he's going to get some opportunities, and he's a guy that, you know, you can switch back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen if need be. But 2 years ago, he was a really good starter, and if anybody falters, Woodruff or Suter, you know, he could be a logical alternative, a guy to kind of plug in there. I think, selfishly, from a selfish standpoint, media would love to see Brett Phillips back up as soon as possible. I don't know how realistic that is. He does have some things working in his favor, left-handed bat. He's got some pop. Tremendous defensive player, right. Tremendous arm, as we all saw. So he brings a little bit something different to the table with that skill set. I don't know. Obviously, injuries would play a role. The Brewers are obviously covered, you know, with Hernan Perez being the fifth outfielder on the roster as it's currently constructed. So, selfishly, it'd be great to see him come up. It's going to be interesting to see guys who have not been in the major leagues before. You know, how quickly do the Brewers perhaps go to a guy like Corbin Burnes, a guy like Freddie Peralta? I think the Brewers would like to see them have some success at AAA before making that call, but they've shown in the past that they are not afraid to call guys up without having pitched in AAA before. So that's a couple names, I guess, off the top of my head. Nothing too earth-shattering or crazy, but guys that I think all make sense one way or the other as the team moves forward.
In your ranking that I mentioned earlier, the top 25 players, the 1 through 25, you've got Christian Yelich number 1, Lorenzo Cain number 2. Not a surprise, those are the two guys that the Brewers, of course, acquired in the offseason. You look around, I wrote about what national pundits were saying about the Brewers on Wednesday, and so many people mentioning Yelich and Cain. That's of course, the top storyline for the Brewers this offseason. We've certainly alluded to them, but I don't know if we've really talked about what you think the impact they're going to have. And you've gotten to see them all spring long. I mean, how different does this offense feel with those two guys at the top of the lineup?
I don't think it's going too far to call them transformational type players for this offense. And everybody remembers how the Brewers offense went into the tank in the second half last year. You know, scoring a run per game less. The home runs went away. Strikeouts were still there. It was just hard to score runs. These two guys at the top of the order, and you figure, you know, they're going to be hitting 1-2 most of the time. These are guys that get on base consistently. These are guys that can hit home runs but are not home run hitters. They are gap hitters. They're guys that just get on base. They can steal a base if need be. And with the guys behind him, the Ryan Brauns, the guys behind Cain and Yelich, I should say, you have Travis Shaw, you have Ryan Braun, you have Eric Thames. You know, you've got guys that can definitely drive them in. So getting on base is obviously a huge factor for both of those guys. Defensively, I don't think that their presence in the outfield can be understated either. Cain was a finalist for the Gold Glove last year in center field with the Royals. Yelich has won a Gold Glove before. That was in left field with the Marlins, his first full year in the majors in 2014. So these are guys that do it all, really. And Yelich is a pretty quiet guy so far from what I've witnessed, but obviously gets along well with teammates. Cain is, I think, immediately kind of steps in and fills one of those clubhouse leader roles as well, which is another thing that cannot be understated. It's a good clubhouse. It's got great chemistry, but kind of adding his veteran presence in there. Just from the little bit that I've observed of him so far, he's a very calming influence, very relaxed, very laid back. And I think he's a guy that's going to set the tone for the team in a number of ways.
So you're talking about the chemistry, and Tom Hodricourt, when he did his three reasons to believe and three reasons to be concerned about the Brewers a couple days ago, mentioned that the clubhouse chemistry is great. All reports seem to indicate that. How much, just personally, you speaking, how much do you feel like that matters? Because in a Major League Baseball, that pitcher versus batter matchup at the center of everything, it seems like that would weed chemistry out of the equation, but, you know, more so than other sports. How do you look at it? How important is that element?
Yeah, I mean, the chemistry thing, I don't think is a huge factor once the game is being played and things are going on the field. It's off the field. And think about the amount of time that these guys spend together. You know, 162 games, you're together for 6 weeks during the spring. If there's postseason, you know, you throw that into the mix too. I mean, you're talking, you know, maybe 200 games in a season. And that's a lot of time. I mean, you hear the guys talk about it all the time. They're around their teammates and the staff and the personnel more than they are their families, and it's not even close. So it's important to be able to get along. It's important to be able to have fun. And that I think engenders, it kind of sets the stage for winning, if that makes sense. This is my eighth year covering the team. Tom obviously has been doing it for 30 plus. He's seen a lot more teams and a lot more, I guess, combinations of personalities and players and such. But just from my vantage point, last year and this year, the chemistry is as good as I've seen it since 2011. And it's not to say that years prior it was bad, but it just seems like it's kind of this perfect mix, so to speak. I think G-Man Choi put it best the other day. I was just talking to him about, you know, what he likes about the Brewers and being with the team. And he said something to the effect of, it's like being at an amusement park with friends, but you can still get your work done. You know, it's still business-like. So you can have fun. You can get along with guys. You can, you know, you can dance. You can listen to music. These are things that they all do all the time. But when it comes down to getting down to business and getting their work done, they're doing that too. So I don't think it can be overstated how important chemistry is in baseball. And luckily for the Brewers, they seem to have that good mix here going forward, and what's expected to be a really good year for them.
It is, and you and Tom both predict them to go to the playoffs as a wild card team. You wrote that on the site a couple days ago. And we've talked a lot about what makes them good, the offense, and the concerns that people have, usually just centered around the starting rotation. I guess, what were ultimately the factors that led you to feel like this is a playoff team?
I would say just the mix of everything together, the whole picture. We talked about Kane and Yelich, those two guys being transformational type offensive players. This is a team that has a good chance to be one of the top, you know, probably five or six, seven offenses in the major leagues if everything goes according to plan. So you can't understate that. And pitching, I think, is going to be the interesting thing. Obviously, most everybody expected the Brewers to go out and get, you know, at least one more kind of name starter to bolster the rotation with Jimmy Nelson being out. Didn't happen, but the Brewers are very confident in the young pitching that they have. I think they're very confident that Brent Suter can fill a role and be productive. They're excited to see what Brandon Woodruff can do, being the fifth guy out there. And if that doesn't work, they do have alternatives like we talked about in the minor leagues. Now, I don't think people really think about it, but the Brewers have always, under Mark Adonasio, tried to position themselves to be buyers if the opportunity presents itself. If they're competitive, you know, we saw last year they made a couple of minor moves, smaller moves, but they were effective moves, picking up Neil Walker, picking up Anthony Swarzak. If the Brewers are right in the mix this year and they feel like they need to add another starter, it would not surprise me to see them, you know, trade several of their prospects to try to bring somebody in and try to help their chances. They've done that repeatedly in the past. I don't think that they would shy away from that again this year. The bullpen, I think, can be a strength. Corey Knebel, Josh Hader, those two guys at the back end are very good. The question to me is, can Jacob Barnes kind of harness his tremendous potential and perform more consistently? Can Matt Albers live up to what he did last year with the Nationals? Had a really good year. Can Boone Logan come back and be effective as the left-hander that they're one of the left-handers that they're now lacking? And can some of these fringe guys, I wouldn't call Jeremy Jeffress a fringe guy, he's kind of a versatile, flexible guy, you know, can he have another good year this year? For whatever reason, he just seems really comfortable in Milwaukee and always pitches well for the Brewers. So I just kind of think, I guess I'm rambling, but everything put together, the entire recipe, the entire mix, to me looks like a wild card team at this point.
So a couple quick hitters then before we take off. Spring training is over, but you saw them begin the reconstruction process at the Maryvale baseball facility where the Brewers play their spring training games. Kind of curious, just what from what you're familiar with and the plans and everything, how are those changes gonna for any fan that ever wants to go to a spring training game next year and beyond, how are these plans gonna change the experience?
Well, before we get to how the fans are affected, let's get to how the media is being affected.
Of course,
and we're actually
we could never we can't forget that detail.
We're actually supposedly going to have a refurbished press box that has windows that we can actually see through, which is
instead of the
amazing.
poles.
Padraig likens the current windows to trying to look through a gallon of milk to the field, and it's not really far off. So it makes work a little difficult if you leave those windows closed. But my selfishness aside, I think it's going to be a better setup. It's going to be much more like the other facilities in Arizona, if that makes sense. Maryvale, the setup is great. Everything is very closely contained. You can walk to everything in about 5 minutes, the backfields to the major league complex and so forth. But it needed updating, let's be honest. And what's going to happen now is there's going to be a big building built, which is going to house the clubhouse, the workout facilities, and everything. That's going to be running down the where kind of, I guess, the building that faces the parking lot right now. Anybody who's been there will know what I'm talking about. But the concourse is going to be widened out front, the kind of the greeting area or the entry plaza, whatever you want to say. The big thing for me is going to be the concourses running along the bases, behind the bases, are going to be much wider apparently, which is going to be big because anybody who's tried to walk through there when the Giants are there, the Cubs or something, when there's a big crowd, it's very hard to maneuver in there as it's currently constructed. Fans can, from what I understand, batting tunnels, workout facilities and stuff are going to be built out kind of toward the parking lot now. So people will be able to see these guys taking swings, working out and so forth as they're walking into the ballpark. So, that's just a couple ways that it's going to change. I would assume the concessions, will be a little bit different, probably a little bit more improved. There's going to be a new scoreboard, which will be amazing because it's the same, literally the same scoreboard that they've had since the day it opened. And it's like,
Wow.
I think most high schools honestly have better scoreboards. So I think this one's going to have video capability and stuff. So
Total overhaul.
it's going to be amazing. I was talking to Tom Flanagan, the farm director, yesterday, and he was saying that the staging and the amount of work that's taken place just since we left on Sunday, Monday is incredible. They've got literally the entire complex is basically fenced off now, and they tore out a bunch of stuff. They have dumpsters all lined up, so they're not messing around. They got about 10 months to get this all done. And they swear it's going to be done by the time we get back down there next February. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting, but also going to be exciting, I think, for everybody, media, fans, players, staff, everybody.
I'm going to give you my bold prediction for this Brewers team, and you can tell me if if I'm off base. I think originally I was tempering my expectations for Josh Hader, to guard against the sophomore slump, but I've changed my mind on that. I think between the hair, the ability he has, he had a great spring. I think this is going to be the summer of Josh Hader. I think he's going to be an all-star, especially because baseball seems to value middle relievers or relievers who are more versatile than they have ever than ever before, kind of in the Andrew Miller era. What do you think? Could Josh Hader be an all-star this year?
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I think the Brewers are very excited. I think Craig Counsell is very excited about how they can use him. I've gotten emails, I've gotten tweets from people, why aren't the Brewers starting him? I think, like you mentioned, baseball is shifting to becoming more of a bullpen game. If you can get your starter to get you through 5 innings, if you can utilize Hader in a number of different ways. You can have him pitch 2 innings. You can have him pitch 1 inning. You can have him pitch high leverage. You can have him pitch early. You can have him pitch late. He can fill in as closer if Knebel's not available. There's a bunch of different things he can do, and you can utilize him. You don't want to overwork a guy, but based on the way Council used his bullpen last year, he's going to get 70 plus appearances like Knebel did last year, like Barnes did last year. So the more times you hand him the ball, you think the better it's going to be for the team. I know he gives hitters a really scary look. He's fun to watch with the hair flying all over the place. I think he looked cooler with the goggles than without.
Yes, very disappointing that he'll be wearing contacts.
hopefully he's got the contact thing figured out. He was struggling a little bit with it earlier in camp. So I wouldn't necessarily argue with that. Maybe a little bit early, but I definitely think that Hader does have all-star potential. He's that good.
One of the storylines people will be watching on opening day is Ryan Braun playing over at first base. I know he's still getting comfortable over there. We haven't talked about how that impacts Eric Thames. And, you know, he was brought here, and I think people dismiss sort of his role a little bit because it was a fairly inexpensive contract, and he had a nice year, but I don't know. You know, toward the second half of the season, I think people got down on him a little bit. Should there be some concern that Eric Thames' playing time has sort of diminished here with Ryan Braun moving to first base, that could ultimately be a problem?
No, not at all. I mean, Eric Thames was a little bit, from our perspective, a little bit different this spring. He was a little less accessible. wasn't quite as happy-go-lucky as he was last year. There could be a number of reasons for that. We asked Craig Counsell about that the other day, and he made no bones about it. Thames is going to be starting the majority of days at first base. He's not losing any playing time as far as he's concerned. You know, I mean, you're facing right-handed pitching the majority of the time, and Thames obviously is going to be the guy when that happens. You know, Braun is going to be the alternative. We'll see what happens with Aguilar when there's a lefty on the mound. But and Ryan Braun obviously is going to start opening day with Clayton Richard starting tomorrow right. For the Padres. But by and large, I don't think Thames' playing time is going to be affected all that much. I think the big thing with him is just, you know, obviously everybody remembers that crazy April that he had last year and all the home runs and everything. That would be great, again, obviously, from the Brewers' perspective. I think they would like, and Thames told me earlier in camp, he would like just kind of a less roller coaster year, if that makes sense. Fewer ups and downs, being more consistent across the board, cutting down on the strikeouts, you know, just basically being a more consistent player than he was a year ago. And he was pretty good a year ago. And like you talked about, for the amount of money that he's being paid, really was a bargain when it comes right down to it. So
yeah,
I don't anticipate really much changing for Eric Thames at all. You know, Greg Bird getting hurt with the Yankees, immediately people start wondering, you know, can the Brewers trade from that position because it's a position of strength? Possibly. You know, they've got Choi, Aguilar. You know, there's pieces that can be moved if need be, if they can find a fit. But as of right now, I would expect Eric Thames to be out there the majority of days.
It seems that things move pretty quickly. The Brewers not so long ago were very weak in first base. You know, they signed Chris Carter for the year. It was Adam Lind and no one else for a while. So
let's play a game. Let's think back 2013. How many first basemen can you
name? Oh, man, there were so many. I don't even want to try it because I don't feel like I could name more than
opening day first baseman. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it was Alex Gonzalez.
Oh yes,
Uni
that's right.
Betancourt played first
Uni
base.
Betancourt definitely played
Martin
first base.
Martin Maldonado played first base. Jonathan Lucroy played first base.
Some murderer's row over there.
Juan Francisco played first base. Blake Lalee played first base.
That's right. I believe Blake Lalee had a walk-off home run one game, or maybe a late home run. Walk-off single.
Yes.
Good enough. All right.
Yes. But good memory, though,
yeah. Yeah, there was his stay in Milwaukee was pretty short. But, yeah, it's a different world this year for the Brewers. One last thought. Taylor Williams, not sure if he's going to be on the opening day roster, but he'll probably be one of the first guys called up if they need a bullpen arm. What did you see from him? He had a rocky final start, but he was pretty good, kind of a diminutive guy. But give me a sense of what fans could expect from him.
Fireballer, you know, exciting young arm. That's what you want, I think, if you're a fan, you know, looking at guys coming up, pitchers, be it starters or bullpen guys, you like the fireballers and the guys that have the velo, and he's definitely one of those guys. He's a guy that I think you can root for as well because of the path that he took him to get to this point, you know, going through the Tommy John, basically missing 2 years of his career to get back to this point. Very nice kid. I think they're very enamored with his potential. So he's a guy that definitely will fit into that mix in the bullpen at some point. Again, you know, we talked about just using arms in general, 13 starters last year. I don't remember how many relievers they used, but you know, he could be one of those guys that's kind of on that Colorado Springs train back and forth, like David Goforth was. A couple years ago, we called him David Go Back and Forth.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know, Keon Broxton did that, obviously a position player, but there always seems to be one guy every season that kind of falls on the sword and has to take that train back and forth.
Brent Suter was definitely that guy. Yep.
So maybe that's Williams this year. Maybe he gets onto the roster and sticks. You don't know. Maybe he performs from the outset. But options can work for you and can work against you. And in a case like that, player obviously wants to be in the major leagues. But Brent Suter took it in the right way last year and said, if I'm that guy, I'm that guy. At least I'm coming back. You know, I know I'm coming back at some point. So Williams definitely an exciting arm and definitely should be fun to watch how he does this year.
All right, that's it from Todd. Next up, I've got an interview with Michael Boettcher, the head groundskeeper at Miller Park. He's 34 years old. I believe he's the third youngest groundskeeper in Major League Baseball. He chatted a couple days ago about what it takes to keep that field in shape, what he's doing to get it ready for opening day, and you know, just some basic stories from what he does and how he keeps the grass looking green. It's very different inside Miller Park than it is in our backyards right now. So give a listen to that. We'll be right back after that. My guest is Michael Boettcher, head groundskeeper for the Milwaukee Brewers. We are inside Miller Park. The grass is green, the sky is blue, the roof is open. It looks like summer. It does not feel like summer. How often do you guys just go around those heating lamps over there and warm your hands? That's got to be like the campfire in the area here when you're freezing cold trying to get the grounds ready here.
Yeah, you know, anything we can do to warm it up, Mother Nature's ball in the sky, the good old sun does it the best. But yeah, air temps are still a little chilly. We're waiting for a warm-up this week to come to help us do our last preparations here for the for opening day, a week from today, actually. So yeah, the grow lights have done great wonders for us to get the grass started. A little bit of heat that's associated with the grow lights helps out as well this time of year.
Yeah.
Overall, Mother Nature's doing her part, and we're just hoping for the last little push here.
So your job is to make the grass look good. I'm sure that's what everyone thinks your job is exclusively, but my understanding is your job actually extends even to the grounds around Miller Park. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but go through what the purview of your job really is.
Yeah, I think, you know, the job itself, yes, that is the primary focus, is the playing surface here within Miller Park. But there's a lot of other things going on around the surface and the park itself. So, yes, I do oversee the Little League field outside the stadium here, the landscape. And now my duties are stretching a little bit more further south to Arizona now.
Really?
A little bit more involvement there. But, you know, primarily for here, roof positioning, surface preparations, and making sure that our playing surface is 100% ready at all times for our team.
So I want to talk about that roof a little bit, but first, just to backtrack and kind of get into how you got into the job. You are a Wisconsinite. You're from the Eau Claire area. Can you kind of take us through the Cliff's Notes of how you ended up in this position?
Yeah, I think, you know, it all started way back when, being on the farm. Actually, that's where she starts, up in the Eau Claire area, Ossie Fairchild there to be specific. And, I grew up loving land, playing in the soils and having a good time. And I think that's what I get to do today. It's almost a kid in me gets to enjoy the job every day and being outside working with the land. I went to University of Wisconsin-Madison to get my bachelor's degree in horticulture. Did a couple internships throughout my time there as getting my education. And one of them actually happened to be here at Miller Park. So that's where I got my start, my foot in the door. And here now, I've been here, this is my 10th season full time. So got my full time start here in 2009 and been here ever since. So it's been a lot of fun. My fifth year this year as the director and overseeing the entire operations. Every year has its challenges, but I like it every year that we have a great team to put together and a surface to put out for our players, regardless if it's April or June or October. So
hopefully October.
Yeah,
that
hopefully
sounds great.
October, exactly. So we're it's been great. I've been here now, like I said, this is my 10th year, and it feels like I've been here only probably about the matter of 1 year. It's gone really fast and really enjoyed it.
I feel like your job is a little bit like, or at least in my mind, like an offensive lineman. The only time people know who your name or know who you are is when something goes wrong. I don't know if that's how you feel about it. And if that is, like, can you even enjoy these baseball games? Because you're constantly thinking, well, what, you know, did we do this right? Did he fall down because the field was uneven? Like, how do you enjoy the baseball games?
Yeah, I think, you know, I do enjoy the games. They are still fun. But the one thing is that it is part of my job. I am evaluating how the surface is playing. And just like the players do, we make adjustments at the same time, trying to make sure that the surface is playing how it's supposed to play. You know, when we see a divot in the turf or a ball maybe makes a little different bounce than it's supposed to sometimes, we log that and we make that adjustment, you know. The nice thing is, though, about the divots, everybody says, oh, man, that must be horrible when the divots come out on the turf. Well, the biggest thing is it's forgiving the athletes for a certain move, you know,
sure.
And the grass is responding to how the athlete's utilizing the surface. So for us, you know, how that field responds is huge for us. And I think overall it is a little stress, but at the same token, it's how the surface is prepared. And we do our best every single day, game in and game out, to make sure that the surface is prepped and ready to their liking.
And so speaking of that, here's a question you get asked all the time. How much the players and the personnel with the Brewers impact what you do? You know, you hear stories, ground ball pitcher, the grass is going to be growing longer. That's an easy one. But how often do you interact with personnel? How often do you try to cater to what the team wants?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there is those interactions and there's those discussions about the surface and how it's playing overall. I think the biggest thing that we see on our constant dialogue is consistency,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that the players have a consistent surface, whether the roof is open, whether the roof is closed, whether it's sunny out, whether it's cloudy out, whether it's raining, you know, or it's 40 degrees out or 60 degrees
right.
out or 80 degrees out. We try to make sure that the surface is playing consistent for them every day. So in terms of that dialogue, I think it's more centered around how do we achieve consistency. You know, we try to prepare the grass, the clay, for the way it's supposed to be prepared every day and how it's supposed to be cared for, to ensure we have a high quality surface and not changing mowing heights and stuff like that for anything. It's just maintaining at the proper height so the turf plant's healthy. And then overall having a consistent surface for them.
So right along with that, this field, I don't know if you can compare it to other major league fields, but I can't imagine there's one more challenging. With the roof design the way it is, you get a lot of shadow kind of permanently in some places of the park. Plus, we're in Wisconsin. It's freezing a lot of the time. I mean, is this as tough as it gets in Major League Baseball, and how do you combat some of those factors?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing to say to that is that everybody has their challenges. You know,
sure.
We here in Milwaukee, obviously we're fighting cold temperatures. We're fighting, you know, the restraints of the retractable roof structure that we have here. And we're just fighting the time of year, you know, overall. So we were supposed to be warmer than we were the last couple of days. But as soon as that lake breeze kicks up, it really just plummets our temperatures back down and keeps us grounded around here. So I think for us, yes, we do have those known challenges of, you know, restricted sunlight with the retractable roof structure, the colder temperatures overall, and just, you know, trying to get the grass going this time of year. But I think from a professional groundskeeper standpoint, when talking to other groundskeepers, we all have our challenges throughout the league, wherever we're located.
Sure. If you drive by Miller Park in the winter, some days you'll see the roof open, like, and you were kind of referring to that. Some days it's half open. I'm sure there's a method to that. Can you kind of, in a layman's terms, go through what an off season looks like? I mean, does it look like the grass in my backyard, or does it stay green and lush and covered up all winter long? How do you handle that in the off season?
Yeah, here we do some steps through the off season to ensure that we have a good starting point every spring here. We actually do put the field under breathable blankets all winter long. Those usually go down a few days before Thanksgiving, and they stay down this year until March 5th. And so what that allows us to do is it maintains that leaf tissue all winter long that we were growing last year. So when you're looking out here today, you're seeing a lot of the tissue that we were growing last year.
Sure.
So we do that, and then we couple that with our roof management and then the positioning of it. We need to keep getting moisture to the surface throughout the winter because the plant is still alive. So we do need to keep moisture to the plant.
So snow, even, like, that's
right. We'd love to get snow and some rain. We're actually going to try to take the rain here tonight that we're forecasted for. So
sure.
We're just trying to keep the plant moist and hydrated throughout the winter. And then, you know, coupled with the covers and the roof positioning, we try to make sure we don't dry it down too much. But then when we try to start waking her up here in late February, early March, we try to open up, we try to get some precip down and try to start getting the turf plant growing again. So even though it's green on the whole field, we do fight some dormancy issues throughout the park in terms of, you know, where the shade lines are and stuff. But I think overall the field's waking up pretty well right now, and we're hoping to have it ready given the forecast we have.
So you're getting set for your fifth opening day as the head guy. You said 10th overall. Is there anything different or new about the field this year? And I guess just how do you feel around opening day? Is it nerve-wracking? I'm guessing it's exciting for you like it is for a lot of people.
It is. I think in the baseball sport, you know, the sport of baseball itself, this is a fun time for everybody. We all have a clean slate, you know. We all have a shot at October baseball. And I think, you know, with the excitement of that, coupled with, you know, coming out here and a lot of people seeing the green grass, I think it all just builds to one big, you know, excitement to what the baseball season's going to be. And for us as a grounds department, you know, we've been working day in, day out for several months trying to make sure we're ready for the season. And I think, you know, we've all been kind of in stocking caps and winter coats and gloves for a long time. And, you know, you get to come out here in the next few weeks and, you know, have the nice conditions out here for the team to play in. And I think, the crew is excited overall. We as a department, we're happy with how we got to where we are. This year, we haven't really changed much in terms of the surface. I think, again, we're just trying to preach for that consistency and really produce that consistency for the players. And when they step back here a week from today, coming back in from San Diego, you know, we want the surface pretty much the way that they knew it last year when they left. And I think that's going to allow them to hopefully play to the level that they want to play to.
You see some fields that have kind of entertaining outfield mowing patterns, and not necessarily here, but how much input do you put in on how the grass is mowed, how it looks aesthetically, and how often do you change that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we want to have it look good. It's a nice little canvas out there to produce some art, you know, and kind of improve the surface in terms of its overall visibility. But for us, you know, our patterns definitely focus around the time of year. The more intricate the pattern, the more usually wear and tear it puts on the turf.
Yeah.
So for us, we try to keep things pretty simplistic and not overdo it. You know, the people are here to see the game and not necessarily the field. So we're here to obviously add a little bit to the, I want to say, ambiance of what Miller Park is when you come out here to see a game. But at the same token, we want the surface to play well, and the patterns that we do kind of reflect, you know, the time of year, what we are able to do throughout the season. So we try to rotate them. The grass doesn't like to be rolled down the same way all season long. So we try to switch them up about every homestand if we can.
All right, so last thought. There are a lot of concerts here, and that looks like that wreaks absolute havoc on the grounds. Is there any way you can go to one of those concerts and have a good time without thinking about what's going to happen to the grass?
Yeah, I mean, they are interesting when it comes to trying to prepare the surface for a concert like that when you got 10,000 people on your playing surface and everything, coupled with the stage. And, you know, I try to enjoy as much as I can for the minimal times that I have to enjoy it. But it is a job, and the preparation that goes into it. You know, we've been prepping for months now for Kenny Chesney to come in here at the end of April already. So, you know, I think our preparations, it allows us to enjoy him a little bit more if we've prepared properly. But there is a few things out of our hands that make it a little stressful. But, you know, overall, the preparations should allow us to come through it okay this year, and hope for the best weather that we can around that time of the show.
All right, Michael Boettcher, head groundskeeper for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
My thanks to Michael Boettcher for joining me at Miller Park. My thanks to Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat writer. He will be there at opening day on Monday to watch the St. Louis Cardinals come into town to take on the Brewers. Hopefully you're excited. Thursday, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock actually, 4 o'clock Eastern, 3 o'clock locally. You'll have Clayton Richards and Chase Anderson squaring off. Brewers against the Padres. Todd, are you ready for baseball?
Let's play some ball.
Yes, with his patented enthusiasm. Thanks.
Ernie says hi, too, by the way.
Ernie is his cat, and he's been watching us the entire time. It's a little creepy. Thanks for listening to the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We'll be back again real soon.